I have quite a few friends who had built very successful businesses. They built them over, you know, from 2004 to 2007, even 2008. And now they have seen those businesses disappear. This is Robert Scrobe of Business Nation Radio, and maybe you have somebody that you know that's been in that situation, or maybe you are in that situation. And I, for the weekend, I had quite a few conversations with folks, and I just wanted to share some of the things that, we talked about, and really, you know, what are some things that they're doing to overcome those frustrations. And, you know, as you know, it's not just the business reversal, but the emotional pain and frustration that goes along with it. And for years, you worked so hard to build a business, to build a new opportunity for yourself. And my goodness, you watched it grow and flourish. And you had competitive problems. It didn't feel like it was easy at the time. I mean, we had competitors. It was darn difficult in 2005 to succeed. And you worked through it and built a great business, built a great career. And then 2008, 2009, maybe you saw it disappear, or you have a friend that you know who is in that situation. One of the most important things to do when you find yourself in that situation is to forget about the losses. I know it's difficult, but you know, you can't. A friend of mine, he built a $3 million a year business. I mean, $3 million, I mean, putting $3 million in his pocket every year. That was the net. And he had built that business within a couple of years from scratch. It was just him and a secretary, and he was able to put $3 million a year in his pocket in that business. And so today, everything he tries to do, he compares to that $3 million business. And I keep telling him, look, you can't look at that old business. It's gone. The market, the economy, things have changed. That opportunity has disappeared. And now, instead of evaluating what you're doing today against what you were doing 2 years ago, instead, you have to focus forward on your new opportunities. And instead of comparing yourself against other people or old businesses, instead, compare yourself against your goals. Set goals, set a trajectory and a plan to reach those goals, and then measure and evaluate yourself based on the progress you make towards achieving those goals, and build your self-worth against that rather than looking back, comparing yourself against the old thing. Also, you know, forget about the difficulties. You know, yes, it is a challenge. And you, maybe you've got bill collectors calling, or maybe you've been, you know, you got foreclosure, or just have gone through it, or you're contemplating bankruptcy. Or you got all these things that are overwhelming you. Instead of thinking about those, deal with them as you must. If you got people calling, you know, tell them what you need to tell them, write a little script, give them some information, you know, have a plan, but then put all of that aside, kind of like a box, you know, and set it aside in that box, and then instead focus on your progress and making progress towards your goals. Because if you continually think about what you used to have or worry about what you're going to lose, it's all going to happen. Your worst fears are going to come true. Instead, what I find is that by putting it aside, handling it, and then focusing on your goals, you're able to move forward. I've had a similar situation. My wife and I, when we got married, we owed, I don't know, it was like three times our annual income in credit card debt. Yeah, credit card debt. It was tens of thousands of dollars. Lots of money. It was almost $100,000 we owed. And we had collectors calling. We had checks that were bouncing, and it was a financial catastrophe. But what I did is we got a budget, spent some time figuring out how we were going to pay things and what bills we were going to pay and when and how that was going to work. And then I got busy generating the income we needed to pay those bills and extra everywhere I could. And by focusing on going forward, instead of this bill collector called or that bill collector, I was able to focus on positive. And so even though I was still, you know, a month later in almost as much debt, I mean, we'd paid off pennies compared to what we owed, I felt better and we were moving forward. And that's the way you can feel better and move forward too, so that you can grow in spite of challenges. We're going to have more information about how you can grow in spite of challenges here on Business Nation Radio after this. This is Business Nation Radio. I'm your host, Robert Scrobe. When times get tough, business owners really clutch to their product or service. They really bury in and focus on what they do, and that's the absolute wrong thing to do. Here on Business Nation Radio, we're going to talk about the tough economy and some of the tough things that people are going through, and really work through a new plan of that you can beat all of this and grow in spite of all of these challenges. And, you know, there's a lot of businesses that are having problems today, and you know what? There's a lot of people who are unemployed. That, and you might be unemployed, but there's a lot of folks that are. I mean, millions. It really is. So, you know, as difficult as it is, know that you're not the only one going through this. And all of it, what that's going to do is create a lot of new business opportunities for a couple of reasons. One, you know, a lot of the folks that are unemployed, and maybe that includes you, will create new businesses. You know, rather than go and look for handouts or look for a job or look for whatever, it's sometimes a lot more productive just to go get in business for yourself and take control of that opportunity rather than allow it to be controlled for you. And two, there's going to be a lot of folks who, you know, who have run a small business that have had a terrible time finding employees or the people they need to grow, that will be able to find those people because now they're unemployed. You know, for years, it was terribly difficult to try to recruit into a small business because employees looked at it and went, geez, you know, I can work for this big corporation and get all these benefits. Why would I want to work for, you know, some small company and have a small office when I can work for a big one and have, you know, all the perks that go along with a big company? Well, now today, those small businesses are looking more and more attractive. And, you know, as small businesses deal with a tough economy, that one of the first things that business owners do is they focus on their product or service. So as a plumber, you know, what you do is you dig down and try to, you know, you're having a tough time, you're having a problem getting customers, and you focus on the plumbing and you focus on making it the best you can. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's very good to deliver a high quality service. But, you know, but we all do that. And, you know, not just a plumber example, but, you know, man, you know, we really get into the details and try to wow our customer. Well, that is an important part of the relationship, but not the only part of the relationship. And as a business owner, rather than digging in and focusing internally on ourselves and on our business, instead focus on the outside and figure out what relationships you can foster and create and which relationships you already have that you need to grow. And I'm not just talking about, oh, well, let's go make a sales call. Let's figure out who are the important people in your life today. You know, certainly your spouse, if you have one, your kids, if you have them, and, you know, maybe if you've got a boss or employer or employees, you know, what are those key relationships? Write them down. Write their names down. What can you do to make that relationship better today? What can you do this week to make that relationship better? You know, how can you grow and improve the relationships you have? Now, business relationships. Who are your key customers? Who are your key clients? Who are your key suppliers? Who are folks that you want to be your customers? You know, what are the top 10 customer prospects that you have? You know, who are the top 5 people who can refer you new clients? Write their names down. The top 10 prospects and the top 5 potential referral partners. You know, who are some folks that have given you referrals over the last 12 months? Write those names down. Now, what are some things that you could do this week in order to build a better relationship with them? You know, send them a note card, maybe send them a small gift, call them, invite them out to lunch. You go over and visit them at their office. You know, find, you go through some articles and magazines and maybe pull out some articles to send to them that you think they might like. Or if you see some things on websites that you think they might enjoy, go ahead and send that to them. You know, certainly, you know, everything on the, you know, that's, you know, tasteful, but build those relationships, because those relationships are going to improve your business and how many customers you get, kind of regardless of the quality of the product that you're delivering. Really, I mean, you certainly want to deliver a great product, but those relationships will pay you more. So instead of taking all of this stress and internalizing it, putting it into your business and trying to focus on your product, instead, focus on those relationships. Those relationships are going to help you grow. If you're unemployed, hey, what are the top 10 companies that you would like to work with over the next 6 months? Write them out, figure out who works there, start building relationship with them. Go to events that you think that they'll be at, go to press conferences that they have, go to industry event and look for them. Find out people who know those folks. And that's how you're going to get in there and build those relationships. Coming up on Business Nation Radio, my guests are Neil Martin, author of the book Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore. And it's a real fascinating book. Also coming up is Beating the Commodity Trap by Richard D. Avene. All that and more coming up on Business Nation Radio. Stay tuned after this brief message. Just a couple of years ago, I discovered how to triple my fees, and my customers were never happier. But then I discovered an ugly truth. As long as my income depended on my labor, I was going to be stuck forever. Didn't matter how much I charged, it wasn't enough, because if I took a vacation, my income stopped. If I got sick, my business was closed. I was on a grind treadmill with no way off. But then I figured it out. I figured out a system that allows you to work once and get paid many times for your labors. And I actually recorded a special video that shows you how several people packaged what they know into information products so that they could do the labor once and get paid many times. There's a special website set up with this video. It's at guruquick.com. That's guruquick.com. At that video, I show you several ways that you can create your own products, how you could package them and make them available for sale. This allows you to take what you know and make it available so that people can buy it and consume it without you having to spend your time and labor. You can create the product once and sell it many times. The margins are great because you're selling paper and ink and CDs. Or even better, you're selling downloadable ebooks over the internet. You know what the markup is for a downloadable ebook? Well, I tell you, it's all profit. And I can tell you how you can create an all-profit business. And I set up a special video at guruquick.com. That's guruquick.com. Check it out so you could break the chains of time and money. And so you could do the work once and get paid many times. The website again is guruquick.com. Check it out today. Why do some products flop while other seemingly similar products take off and become worldwide sensations? Well, according to Neil Martin, author of the book Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore, it has a lot to do with customer psychology. I'm Robert Scrobe, the host of Business Nation Radio, and Neil is an expert in customer behavior, customer satisfaction, and bridging the gap between new technologies and markets. Now, Neil, welcome to Business Nation Radio, but what do you mean when you say marketers are ignoring habits?
Well, I think the big issue is that we have gone, you know, about our merry way as marketers, really believing that people were consciously involved with us. Okay. So most of marketing theory, and I think a lot of marketing practice, comes down to this idea that we assume that people, you know, actively remember our commercials, that they are kind of doing this sort of spreadsheet in their mind of weighing pros and cons. And what my book is about is the idea that neuroscientists in the last 10 or 15 years and cognitive psychologists in the last 10 or 15 years have really unveiled a remarkably different mind than the one we thought we had. So, and what we see is that we actually have two minds inside of our brain.
It sounds like folks are zombies walking around not knowing what they're doing.
No, it's the exact opposite. It's the idea that our, you know, we kind of evolved on a planet over millions of years, and that part of our brain that got us here is the unconscious part of the brain. The conscious part of the brain is very, very new.
Okay.
So basically, it's the idea that our unconscious brain is the thing that can handle, you know, the millions of inputs that we get all the time. It's the part of our brain that's really responding to the environment. And so when we have a novel situation, our conscious brain is all over it.
Huh.
But with most of our decisions, we've solved them before, so we don't actually have to think about it anymore. And that part of our brain that does that automatic stuff, you know, and when we go to the grocery store, when we go online, when we drive, we see that it's really the unconscious mind that's really doing most of the decision making.
It's kind of like when you're driving down the road and you go for a couple of miles, and then all of a sudden you kind of realize that you haven't been paying attention. You've been changing lanes all this time, but you haven't been doing it. Somewhere in your unconscious mind has been taken over. You say that a lot of the marketing and the buying decisions are made in the same way that you're changing lanes going down the highway?
I think that's the perfect example.
Okay.
I think that, you know, not only are you, you know, a lot of times unaware of what you're doing, but, you know, I'm in Atlanta, and, you know, we have commute hell here, and I think a lot of people, you know, in the big cities are very familiar with this, where, you know, you're surrounded by hundreds of cars, you're driving 50, 60, 70 miles per hour, and kind of the universal thought we all have is, gee, I'm bored. Who can I call? And that is exactly right.
Text.
That insight is perfect, because what we see here is that just as I drive down the road thinking about all sorts of other things, listening to talk radio, making calls, that's exactly the way I shop. That I'm thinking about lots of other things. I'll see something. You know, this is my coffee that I buy all the time. And so I don't have to think about it. It's just kind of a reflex. Now, if they move that from the shelf from where it normally is to a new place.
Oh, forget it.
Yeah, that'll actually throw you off. And it's kind of like, wait a second, because you're so automated that process.
Now, it's like kind of like shopping in a new grocery store. You never know where anything is. Now, how do marketers do this wrong? What are some things that they're doing that ignores this unconscious buying behavior?
Well, one of the big examples is really the whole idea of customer satisfaction, which was my dissertation work. So I did all this work on customer satisfaction, was dismayed to discover that it had very little correlation to what I buy next time. I think like 85% of people who switch brands, the last time that we asked them said that they were satisfied or highly satisfied with the brand that they were just getting ready to switch off of.
Mm.
So the idea here is that, you know, when I ask you if you're satisfied, you know, it's a totally artificial environment, because I'm only getting the conscious part of your brain. I'm not getting that part of the unconscious part of your brain that's probably heavily involved in that in that process.
So, I mean, what is it about? So the customer satisfaction survey, it's really just not measuring the entire satisfaction or the entire buying.
Well, I actually think satisfaction is a totally bogus measure. And in other words, I think that we see this statistically, and we've seen meta-analyses of this. We've seen it over and over and over again. I was working at a very large, you know, doing a presentation for a very large company, and I, you know, stuck my foot in my mouth by kind of attacking customer satisfaction. I had the customer satisfaction people in the room, but then this one guy says, well, you know, we just did this massive data run on this, and what he says is 100% true. Our customer satisfaction predicts nothing.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's all about the idea of understanding that it's our what we do over time, what we do repetitively, that shapes the habits that really influence most of what we buy and use.
Neil Martin's book is called Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore. And I really think it's fascinating how Neil kind of takes apart the whole notion of customer satisfaction and whether or not it's really what drives whether customers are going to come back to you over and over again, and how instead of focusing on customer satisfaction, you got to focus on habit. We're going to talk about some examples of habits that you build and things that you need to do within your business in order to to become a habit of your customers right after this brief message. When your customers are being barraged with marketing advertisements from every assorted customer, Budweiser, PayPal, Amazon, goodness knows, Geico, all of these companies are barraging your customers with marketing messages. How are you supposed to stand out and get attention when you've got all of these other competitors, not just within your business, but also outside of your business, competing for the attention of your customer? Well, let me tell you, it is through the book Outrageous Advertising, Marketing That Is Outrageously Successful by my friend Bill Glazer. He authored this book after reviewing thousands of marketing pieces, taking the things that he was successful with, getting customer attention in his retail business, as well as others. It's available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. Outrageous Advertising That's Outrageously Successful by Bill Glazer. Pick it up today. So many business books and management books talk about win-win and things that really sound great to university professors that just don't seem to work in real life. That's why Dan Kennedy wrote the book, The No BS, Ruthless Management of People and Profits, The Ultimate No Holds Barred, Kick Butt, Take No Prisoners Guide to Really Getting Rich. It's available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. It's by Dan Kennedy, where he reveals the insights of why so many business owners get run over by their employees, they get ripped off by their vendors, and they get shysted by their customers. And the insights in this book are extremely revealing because Dan doesn't lie. He's not sugarcoating the truth, but instead he's giving you the real facts of how businesses really operate. The No BS, Ruthless Management of People and Profits by Dan Kennedy, available Amazon.com, BN.com, and bookstores everywhere. So if you give your customers a really over-the-top wow experience and make them not only satisfied but enthused with you, does that mean that they're going to come back and buy from you again and again? Not necessarily, says my guest here on Business Nation Radio. I'm your host, Robert Scrobe. My guest is Neil Martin, author of the book, The 95% of Behaviors Marketers Ignore. It's all about habit. Habit, the 95% of behavior marketers ignore. Neil Martin developed his early insights into the power of habits as a counselor and program director for alcohol and drug addiction. For the past several years, he's worked on updating the principles of marketing in light of research from cognitive psychology and neuroscience that suggests most of human behavior is under the say of unconscious habits. That led him to write his book, Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore. His book is available at bookstores and Amazon.com. I encourage you to check it out. Now, Neil, can you give us some examples here? What are some examples of that businesses that get this right, and what have they done?
Well, I think one of the best examples, and it's an overworked example, but I think it's so illustrative of what success looks like, mm-hmm. is the iPod.
Okay.
Obviously this is a big, a big company with Apple bringing it out, but what they did was they really rethought the whole proposition about how people listen to music, and they made it so intuitive in terms of not just the iPod itself, but the software that you use to manage your music. That once I started doing that, I wasn't thinking about, looking for a cheaper or looking for a better solution, because all my music, my thousands and thousands of songs, were on that platform. Mm. So, I mean, Zoom can come out, doesn't matter. Rio can come out with a new thing, doesn't matter, because I'm not trying to, improve it. Now, I think for the small business person, I think really the whole thing about this is this idea of becoming their customer's habit. So it's much easier to use you than to do it myself.
I mean, Apple had millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars went into testing and redoing and creating the iPod. And of course, the one that we all have isn't the first generation. It took a while. This is just like everything else, one of those overnight sensations that took several years. How does a business owner apply this? What's some practical advice for a business owner trying to make themselves a habit for their customer?
Well, I think that the first thing is to reduce the number of steps that your customer has to go through to use your products or services.
Okay.
You want to make things as easy as possible. Most of my habits form from convenience. You know, the laundry I go to isn't the cheapest. It's not necessarily the best. It's the easiest one for me to get to. And the same thing goes with this idea of understanding that what you're trying to do is to get repetition of behavior. So when you design any kind of marketing program, don't focus on just, you know, attitudinal stuff. Don't just focus on being clever. What you're really trying to do is you're trying to get the customer to do certain things over and over and over again, because inside their brain, they form these synaptic connections that allow them to put that on autopilot.
Hmm.
And so you want to make sure that your pricing, that your distribution channels, that your communications is all based on this idea of what's the behavior that I'm looking for. Be very clear in your own mind. What does success look like? If I'm trying to get somebody, if I'm advertising my car, my goal is to get them to drive the car.
Okay.
My goal isn't to get them to just like the car. It's to actually get them to come to the dealership. So I've got to make sure that every one of these steps is leading to that goal. And look at the reinforcement that I am, you know, putting in place, and to really think about reinforcement, which means that a behavior is more likely to occur in the future versus something like a reward, where in many cases I'm essentially bribing my customer to buy me. And when I do that, when I make these great deals just to get the sale, a lot of times I gut my value proposition going forward. So it's really important to recognize that your goal is a behavioral goal, as opposed to just getting a sale or just getting a an attitude.
Do you have any examples of businesses that have really clearly defined the action that they want their customer to take and made that easy and habit forming?
Well, I like the Kohl's department store people. I mean, I think that they, you know, they've really done well in their sector. Again, it's another large company, but I'm going to give you a small company at the end of this. But the Kohl's people, what they do is when they open up a store, they send out these coupons. And if you use the coupon, you get another coupon.
Mm.
And so when you use that coupon, you get another coupon. So their whole goal is to get you to come into the store three times. Because somebody coming into your store, a shopper coming in, isn't really a customer. You made the example earlier about the like going to a new grocery store.
Right.
Part of your brain that has to learn the grocery store, it basically is creating a map of the external environment.
No, interesting.
And so you've got to do it three or four times before you can really know the layout, and then you can really become a customer.
Okay.
Now I've got my wife has a Pilates studio. Right beside her Pilates studio is a guy who has a little catering and lunch place, and he's a culinary trained chef, and he's had this thing for 25 years. But he's discovered that, you know, and I kind of sat down with him, I was just talking to him about the fact that, you know, he does a really good job, but he has all these different things he sells. But there's one thing that he did really, really well, which is a chicken pot pie, which is just the best chicken pot pie ever. And so, and we just kind of started talking about that and about, you know, how his business would change if that became his focal point. So he put a sign up that focused on the chicken pot pies. He did. And now he's gotten to the point where instead of having like a large pie that you could buy a slice of, and he would sell the pies themselves, now he's making individual sized pies.
How does he make that into a habit?
And that's the whole thing. So with the whole issue here is that now people can come in, buy the smaller pies, take them home, have them for lunch, have them for, and so he really is to the point where he can barely make enough. Make it up with the smaller pies.
So what he's done is he's diversified the ways you could use his product. By it's not just a lunchtime meal; it's also a dinnertime meal and everything. And the Kohl's example is really neat because Dan Kennedy, a friend of mine, tells a story of a client that he had that was a dry cleaner, and that was his strategy where he would give out coupons, and then whenever a customer came in to use the coupon as a new customer, he would give them another book of coupons, and that, you know, they would come in two or three times, and they felt that once the guy came in three times, he had them for life.
And that is exactly correct. And that is, it is that third time that is critical, because basically all of the things I have to do to get to your store, to get to your shop, to get to your laundry, my brain is learning that, and it's learning it unconsciously. And,
yeah.
and I'm taking it from the conscious mind, thinking turn left, turn right, whatever, to the point where I can essentially just say, you know, cleaners, and I'm on autopilot.
My guest today is Neil Martin, has an eclectic background. In addition to being author of the book, Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore, Neil has worked in psychology, journalism, and dog training. According to Neil, these have given him critical insights needed to reconnect his research to neurobiology and cognitive psychology to today's greatest marketing challenges. All this time, who knew we needed a dog trainer to explain our marketing? And now, you say in your book you need to treat your customers like dogs. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, the whole idea is, and I have border collies, and, and you know, I take them to agility training and this kind of stuff. And what you realize is that they're very, very smart, but they're nonverbal. And so it's all about the idea of the feedback mechanisms that you put in place. Now, you can think about that in terms of how you manage your people, but you can also think about that in terms of how you work with your customers. And my point is that if you work with both the conscious and the unconscious mind of the customer, you're going to become much more valuable to your customer.
Wow.
That when they don't have to think about it anymore because they've given that job to you, then you own them for life because you're their best friend.
Well, there's certainly no more powerful position with our customers than to be their best friend. So, Neil, thanks so much for being my guest today on Business Station Radio. And I encourage you to check out Neil's book, Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore, because it's really fascinating how you should break away from the whole concept of customer satisfaction. Instead, tap into that habit force that your customers have and get them so that they screen everybody else out and just go to you because that's what they do. And it's a really fascinating concept. You can check out Habit, the 95% of Behavior Marketers Ignore at Amazon.com or your local bookstore. Now, coming up on Business Nation Radio, Richard D. Avini. He's the author of the book, Beating the Commodity Trap, How to Maximize Your Competitive Position and Increase Your Pricing Power, so how you can charge more for your products and services and also break free and get the attention that you and your products deserve. All that and more coming up on Business Nation Radio after this. This is Robert Scrobe, your host of Business Nation Radio. I grew up in the offline world. I watched as everyone was all excited about the internet and online marketing, and at the time, I mostly saw using the internet as some sort of fad. A lot of people were excited about online marketing, but direct mail, telephone, and fax were still more effective at generating new customers. But in the last few years, I've seen the internet blossom into a business-building machine. I've created websites that are just like ATM machines, except better. These machines put money into my account every day automatically. That's why I co-authored the book about internet marketing titled The Official Get-Rich Guide to Information Marketing on the Internet. This book outlines the exact steps I use to create websites that generate new customers and money. I'm not a web programmer. I got a guy who does all that techie work. That's what I want to teach you in my book. The Official Get Rich Guide to Information Marketing on the Internet teaches you how to create a website and understand what you need to give to the techie guy, how to evaluate what he or she creates, and how to give them the instructions on finalizing it for the web. For more information about the book, including a video of me by my pool, a webinar revealing the secrets of successful sites, and several success stories, visit the book website at www.internetinformationmarketing.com. For years, I looked at claims about the internet with skepticism. I tested a lot of things, but got better results from offline marketing. But in the last 3 years, the tide has really changed. Now there are a lot of people on the web, and millions of them are buying things. There isn't any reason why they couldn't be buying from you. To get them to buy from you, visit www.internetinformationmarketing.com. The site again is internetinformationmarketing.com. Check it out today. Whenever we're in business and we're trying to generate customers and make sales, one of the chief issues that we face is how to charge higher prices for our products. This is Robert Scrobe, your host of Business Nation Radio, and too many times we get into the trap of trying to charge lower prices just to maintain our market share. And I came across a great book called Beating the Commodity Trap by Richard Devaney, and it's how to maximize your competitive position and increasing your purchasing power. And Mr. Devaney is here with me today on Business Nation Radio. Welcome, Richard.
Oh, thank you very much, Rob. I'm very happy to be here.
Now, I think what it was a really fascinating example that you talked about in your book was Harley-Davidson Motor Company. And I think a lot of people, you know, look at Harley-Davidson and they think about the 1970s and how much turmoil the business went through and then how it came through in the 80s after the employees bought them out. And, you know, certainly kind of what sticks in our mind is through the late 90s where you couldn't get one of those things. I mean, there was several months of a waiting list in order to try to get the new models. And you talk about in your book how in 2004 you foretold that kind of popularity was waning for Harley-Davidson Motor Company. Why did you see that, you know, this iconic brand that it's known as charging very high prices for its products in comparison to competitors? You know, how did you foretell that there was going to be some softening of the market for those Harley-Davidson motorcycles?
Oh, yeah. Well, there were two ways that I saw that. One was some hardcore analysis where I took data on motorcycles and analyzed that data. And the other was just some observational things.
Okay.
There was one day I walked into town and I saw a guy on a motorcycle, and he was a pretty heavy set guy, and he had spikes and tattoos and all the leather and the bandana on, and he looked quite scary.
But,
and he was about 40, you know, probably about 45 or 50, probably more like 50 years old. His hair was starting to gray, and he was holding what looked like a little baby that was his grandson.
Wow.
And he was kissing the grandson and cuddling up to the grandson with such cuteness and love that I said, you know, something has gone wrong with the image of
Well, the guy was probably a lawyer or an attorney or an accountant or something, and here he is living his fantasy on the motorcycle.
Yeah, exactly. So I think one of the things that the company did was, in order to save itself in the 70s and 80s, it created an image for itself which is not sustaining.
Really?
Yeah, and so a lot of people look at the Harley-Davidson and say it's my father's Oldsmobile now.
Ooh.
Because the average age of a driver of a Harley is now approximately 50 years old.
Now, is that any different than it ever has? I mean, is the average, I mean, did people in their 30s used to drive Harley-Davidson?
Well, it was a much younger crowd. It was basically my generation, the baby boomers generation. And the younger kids are not looking for this rebel machismo kind of image anymore, because those are things that are becoming old-fashioned
now,
in a world of feminism and androgyny.
So your kind of thought is that because there's this population band that people that ride Harley-Davidson, it's actually quite a great market, these baby boomers, because these are the ones that actually have the money and are able to pay premium prices for the products. But however, because they're aging and growing older and they are not being replaced by newer motorcycle riders, that's going to create a kind of a waning effect where the demand for their product is going to slow down.
That's exactly right. And the other major change is that one of the largest growing segments and fastest growing segments in the motorcycle business is women. And so the Harley-Davidson doesn't quite fit a woman's image. So they prefer something more individualized and personal expression, and becomes like a fashion accessory rather than a statement of I'm I you know, I'm a tough guy and I want to beat up people.
Now, the other thing.
But not really do that, you know.
The other thing with Harley Davidson is functionally, their motorcycles are a lot taller. So it's really even hard for women to reach when they ride. Now, one of the things that I was questioning about, even with the Harley Davidson example, is it that people who are in their 40s and 50s like to ride Harley Davidson? And the reason that they did so well in the 90s was because the baby boomers were reaching that age. And now as that bulk of population of 40s and 50s gets younger, and the group behind them reaching their 40s and 50s is a proportionally smaller group. So is it really that they're not appealing to the young where they used to, or is it that their group, that bubble is just getting older and passing on, and it's going to be a few years before a new population bubble gets to that age group where they really enjoy that Harley Davidson motorcycle?
Well, I think what you've just said is partially correct, and that is they've ridden the baby boomer a bubble
mm-hmm.
for a long time.
Okay.
Whether the next bubble that comes through will decide to ride Harley Davidson's is, doubtful.
Okay.
Because the next boom will, as it passes through its age groups, are going to be thinking about more modern images.
What are they thinking about?
Well, they're thinking about extreme sports. So they like, you know, motorbikes for mountain climbing and off terrain vehicle type things, and or all terrain vehicle type things, off road kind of stuff.
So whereas,
and they're looking for individualized expression of who they are, because it's a very individualized group.
So whereas
coming up,
whereas freedom for baby boomers meant getting all together and riding in a pack, all dressed the same on similar motorcycles, freedom for the next generation means doing your own thing, doing a very unique activity, probably off the road, and really a much more individual thing rather than kind of freedom by the masses like you had in the Harley Davidson organization.
Yes, I agree tremendously. The Harley group likes to defy authority in groups, and
which is kind of a interesting dichotomy there.
Yeah, it's true, and the young people prefer to do it alone.
Right. Now, my guest is Richard Devaney, and he is author of the book "Beating the Commodity Trap: How to Maximize Your Competitive Position and Increasing Your Pricing Power." I want to talk a lot about how, you know, give some examples of how this applies to small business, and, you know, so somebody who may have been in a dominant position in their environment, in their community, and how all of a sudden they might be finding themselves having to compete based on price when they never had to before because they were the go-to source. But I need to take a break, Richard. Can you mind holding back for me after this next break, and we'll talk about how this applies to a lot of small businesses in the next segment?
No problem.
All right. We'll be right back with Richard Devaney, author of Beating the Commodity Trap: How to Increase Your Competitive Position and Increase Your Pricing Power, right after this brief message. The one book that I recommend above all others is Robert Cialdini's Influence: The Psychology of Persuasion. In this book, Dr. Cialdini reviews several different ways that you can influence the behavior of other people. Can you imagine reaching out and getting somebody to do something because they want to do it? And it's all in this book. This book is available at Barnes & Noble, Borders, Amazon.com, really booksellers everywhere. It's called Influence: The Psychology of Persuasion, and it's all about getting people to do what you want them to by convincing them that it's something that they've wanted to do all the time. It's pure magic. And Robert breaks down each of the methods of influence, the ways that you can do it, and also he tells a lot of great stories to make it easy to understand. Influence: The Psychology of Persuasion. Go out to a bookstore near you or Amazon.com and get it today.
So many business books and management books talk about win-win and things that really sound great to university professors that just don't seem to work in real life. That's why Dan Kennedy wrote the book, The No BS, Ruthless Management of People and Profits, The Ultimate No Holds Barred, Kick Butt, Take No Prisoners Guide to Really Getting Rich. It's available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. It's by Dan Kennedy, where he reveals the insights of why so many business owners get run over by their employees. They get ripped off by their vendors, and they get shysted by their customers. And the insights in this book are extremely revealing because Dan doesn't lie. He's not sugarcoating the truth, but instead he's giving you the real facts of how businesses really operate. The No BS, Ruthless Management of People and Profits by Dan Kennedy, available Amazon.com, BN.com, and bookstores everywhere. In business, you're always trying to get premium prices for your products. You want to try to get the most you can out of what you've got so that you don't have to compete on price and try to be the next Walmart, because quite frankly, Walmart's already the next Walmart. This is Robert Scrobe, your host of Business Nation Radio, and I'm talking with Richard Devaney. He is author of the book, Beating the Commodity Trap, How to Maximize Your Competitive Position and Increase Your Pricing Power. I enjoyed the book thoroughly when I came across it. And I encourage you to check it out at Amazon.com. It's Beating, B-E-A-T-I-N-G, The Commodity Trap. And the author is Richard Devaney. Now, Richard, I appreciate you coming back and being my guest today on Business Nation Radio.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Now, with a business, you talk a lot about folks that, you know, for a long time, you know, Harley Davidson included, but, you know, folks see this, you know, in their home communities where maybe for years they've had a very clear brand. They've had a real clear position in the community, and that really, you know, businesses come to them and they've been able to charge premium prices. And then all of a sudden they see that position slips and they feel like they have to decrease prices in order to just to keep market share. What are some of the things that are happening to a business when they start losing that position in the marketplace where they are the go-to resource?
Sure. Commoditization is the process of losing your unique position in the marketplace. It's kind of like a diamond that's had its facets worn off.
Okay.
It's still a diamond, but it's still, it's lost its luster. And what we see is that it's a very big problem for small businesses because typical places like privately owned bookstore or the independent pharmacy or restaurants find, or for that matter, lumber yards, all of these kinds of things have found big mass producers or mass retailers come in and take away their uniqueness.
Okay.
So CVS shows up, Home Depot shows up against the lumber yards, CVS against the pharmacies.
For years in their market, you know, the business that was the lumber yard, I mean, there used to be dozens of lumber yards around town, and they were the preeminent position of if you needed supplies, this is where you went. I mean, there was a Scotties for a long time, but nobody really, I mean, you really usually went to the privately owned lumber yard. However, with Home Depot and Lowe's, they completely cannibalized the market, and the go-to place became Lowe's rather than the local lumber yard. And I think I agree. There's been a lot of businesses that have seen that happen. Now, how do you avoid that competition and stand out?
Yeah, well, let me give you an example from Beating the Commodity Trap.
Okay.
In that book, I did an analysis of restaurants in New York City, so ultimate small businesses. And I took data from the Zagat's survey, so I didn't have to go out and collect data. I just put it into the computer, and I did some analysis where I plotted, I looked at what was driving the price of a meal plus a drink.
Hmm.
Who got paid more for what?
Okay.
And you'd think it would be location or cuisine, but the surprising result of the analysis was that what was really driving prices was the in-restaurant experience.
Really?
The customer satisfaction with the decor, with the service, and with the quality of the food. And that explained a significant portion of the price differences, like somewhere around 60% of price differences were described by the experience inside the store. And location turned out to only make up about 3 or 4% of the differences in the price. So if you had a really nice restaurant, great experience in a not-so-nice neighborhood, you could make almost the exact same amount as if you were in a good neighborhood in the city.
So, so in fact, it was more about the experience and what customers felt as they were in your restaurant that determined how much they were willing to pay versus what they had to go through to get to your restaurant.
That's correct. Now, traffic may be affected by the location, but not the price.
Okay.
And so, so one of the big things that or lessons that you can get from beating the commodity trap for small businesses is that you can start to find a way to collect information about the quality of the different chains you're competing with and the different stores you're competing with and what customers are paying for.
Hmm.
So, and focus on the things that customers are paying for and focus on the things that customers are paying for increasingly more over time.
Hmm.
So for example, what I discovered was with the restaurant industry in New York that French food was still a very high-priced cuisine.
Right.
But on the other hand, its value over time, over a three-year period, was going down. People were paying less and less for French food. on the other hand, Russian food was even higher premium priced, and it was growing over time.
Oh my goodness!
So, with the client that I worked with, which was a big hotel chain that had lots of restaurants in all its various different brands, we, especially at the high end, we started to change the menus.
And I think that's a fascinating.
What people were paying for.
That's a fascinating example. And the book is Beating the Commodity Trap by Richard D'Avini. And my name is Robert Scrobe, your host of Business Nation Radio. And I think that's a fascinating example because so few business owners go through the work of trying to compare what their customers are buying both from themselves as well as the competitors. I'm analyzing the pricing and trying to figure out what the customers are willing to pay a premium for. And I think that analysis is terrific because it shows that simply by changing the format of the restaurant, you can change your prices and you still have chairs, you still have servers, you still have ovens, and maybe you have to make some changes to some of that stuff. But if you're able to charge significantly higher prices, it could be well worth it by serving Russian food instead of French food, for instance. And that's a fascinating example.
Oh, thank you. I found it to be very interesting because there was a lot of once you actually had data,
mm-hmm.
it actually provided you with the ability to find out what the real truth is. What are customers really paying for? Not what do I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to say about the small businesses is, oftentimes their reaction is exactly the opposite. They get caught in a commodity trap, and they, it's the opposite of what they should be doing.
Uh-huh.
So, for example,
what are some of the mistakes they make?
I worked for years with a local pharmacy,
mm-hmm.
and then CVS opened up a place down the street. So the local pharmacy and CVS was lower priced and open for more hours. So. What they did in their store was they lowered their prices to try to match what was in CVS, and as a consequence, they got caught in the trap that I call deterioration, where everybody moves to the low end.
Right,
and
what was the correct thing? What should they have done instead?
Well, I think a lot of what they needed to do was to reinforce the special experience,
mm-hmm.
but instead. These were folks who were like living the lifestyle of a small business and really weren't trying to do the best for customers.
Oh.
So you know, they'd open the store at 10 o'clock, well, in the morning. But everybody's at work already, and then they'd close at 5 o'clock. So how could you?
Certainly a lot of business owners don't see themselves from the outside. Instead, they see their businesses from the inside. And I think that's why it's so important to check out the book, Beating the Commodity Trap, How to Maximize Your Competitive Position and Increasing Your Pricing Power by Richard Diovini. Now, Richard, thank you so much for being my guest today on Business Nation Radio.
Oh, well, thank you, Rob. I really appreciated the chance to talk to you.
All right. Well, check out Beating the Commodity Trap on Amazon.com. It's got 5 stars, and so I know you're going to give it 5 stars as well, because I think it's really fascinating to look, because Richard goes through 3 different traps that you can get into based on your circumstances. And not only does he describe each of the traps, but also provides a way out and, you know, how to react correctly in order to build a business that benefits you and gives you the lifestyle you need. So more Business Nation Radio, business lifestyle building tips after this brief message.
This is Robert Scrobe, your host of Business Nation Radio. I grew up in the offline world. I watched as everyone was all excited about the internet and online marketing, and at the time, I mostly saw using the internet as some sort of fad. A lot of people were excited about online marketing, but direct mail, telephone, and fax were still more effective at generating new customers. But in the last few years, I've seen the internet blossom into a business-building machine. I've created websites that are just like ATM machines, except better. These machines put money into my account every day, automatically. That's why I co-authored the book about internet marketing titled The Official Get Rich Guide to Information Marketing on the Internet. This book outlines the exact steps I use to create websites that generate new customers and money. I'm not a web programmer. I got a guy who does all that techie work. That's what I want to teach you in my book. The Official Get Rich Guide to Information Marketing on the Internet teaches you how to create a website and understand what you need to give to the techie guy, how to evaluate what he or she creates, and how to give them the instructions on finalizing it for the web. For more information about the book, including a video of me by my pool, a webinar revealing the secrets of successful sites, and several success stories, visit the book website at www.internetinformationmarketing.com. For years, I looked at claims about the internet with skepticism. I tested a lot of things, but got better results from offline marketing. But in the last 3 years, the tide has really changed. Now there are a lot of people on the web, and millions of them are buying things. There isn't any reason why they couldn't be buying from you. To get them to buy from you, visit www.internetinformationmarketing.com. The site again is internetinformationmarketing.com. Check it out today.
I think it was really fascinating talking with Richard Diovini about commoditization, because I see too many business owners make that same mistake where their immediate reaction is to cut prices, when instead it's all about the experience. And if you want to open at 10 and close at 5, I think that's fine, but you have to give your customers such a unique experience that they just can't get anywhere else. Maybe while they wait for their prescriptions to be filled, there's big leather chairs, or maybe you bring it to them instead of them coming to you. You know, those type of changes. Also, talking to Neil Martin, I thought was also fascinating. And I really plan to, you know, he talked a lot about these processes of getting customers to come back and back to you as a habit. And I think that is extremely important for business owners to always think about how to make this sale into a series of sales from their customer. And rather than, you know, just hoping that it happens, or you know, trying to give them a wow experience, set that process up by giving coupons or giving a reason for the customer to come back to you over and over again and get them in that habit. Well, we appreciate that you are in the habit of listening to Business Nation Radio. I think it's your place to get information on building your business so that you can go home earlier and spend more time with your family. Coming up next week, it's about building a great executive team, a team for your business, finding the right people, recruiting them, and motivating them, all coming up next week. Until then, I'm your host, Robert Scrobe, for Business Nation Radio.